Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual with our Saturday afternoon show. And as you know, there's been a lot of sports, a lot of football on the tube and on radio today. And there'll be a similar menu of football tomorrow. And, of course, the game that most people are looking forward to is what's going to happen to the Bears. So the Bears more or less have a team tomorrow that they have a pretty good chance of beating. And if they can't beat Detroit, I don't know who's left on the schedule that they can beat. Anyway, let's hope for the best. They seem to blow hot and cold and have a real good game one weekend, and then the next they're not so impressive. And let's hope that tomorrow will be one of those good days. We're going to talk about football and sports in general with an old friend of mine and the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune. He's a young-looking guy to have a job like that, to find out how he got into that high position. Anyway, George Langford was a writer for the Tribune for years in the sports department. Now he's a sports editor, and they have one of the greatest sports departments, I think, in the country in their paper. So we'll have many things to talk about and get a newspaper man's point of view, as he'll be our guest in just about 1 minute. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is George Langford, who is the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune, one of the world's great newspapers. You know, one of the things about the Tribune, George, I found in my travels, even in the Far East and certainly in the European capitals, it used to be years ago you could always find two papers, the Chicago Tribune and the New York Herald Tribune. And unfortunately, the demise of the New York Herald Tribune, well, I thought a sad thing. I thought it was a great newspaper. But the Chicago Tribune you could find in almost every capital of the world.
I haven't traveled nearly as extensively as you, Commander, but I understand that's true. We've just opened up a bureau in Peking, one of the two newspapers in the U.S. that has gone into there, and we're opening bureaus in Africa and all around. So they are trying to maintain the position of being a worldwide paper.
Well, the reason for opening those offices, say, in China is what? To cover sports events within that framework or what?
Well, we'll have a general reporter there who will cover all sorts of events. But he's going to be there primarily because, of course, China being as large as it is and its relationship to the United States is very important. And to find out what's going on there. That reporter is going to be there primarily to handle news, but I'm sure that we'll be reporting some on the athletic teams from China, which apparently are going to be able to play some in the Olympics next year. That hasn't been completely resolved, but it looks as if they'll have a team.
Where are you going to cover the Olympics?
We'll have four reporters at Moscow for the Summer Olympics next July and August. And we'll have three in Lake Placid for the Winter Olympics this February.
Are you going to Moscow yourself? If you do, I've got a good phone number to get.
I think I'll stay home, Commander.
What about the job of a sports editor of a great paper like the Chicago Tribune? How are things broken down? When do you decide who's going to cover what and who is a specialist in what field? Does that lend something to that party selection?
Well, we try to follow the interests of the individual writer. We divide the staff primarily into two halves, writers and desk people who work inside the department. We have 55 people in our sports department, and about 20 of them are writers. The rest are people who edit copy, that they write headlines, design the pages as you see them appear each morning. We have photographers, of course, who go out and take the photos that you see. And it's quite a large staff, and we have so many additions around the clock that it takes a lot of people to man the inside operation.
Well, I bet it does. How do you decide, for example, on a controversial situation like the baseball commissioner versus Willie Mays? How do you decide what point of view the sports department should take, and do you decide that?
No, I don't. I let our columnists write their own viewpoint, and I don't ever try to tell them what to write. I think that would be a mistake. We hire columnists for their opinions. And this week we had two directly opposite opinions by two of our columnists. David Condon took the side of Commissioner Kuhn in the suspension of Willie Mays because of his association with a firm that supports a gambling casino. And David Israel, our other columnist, took the opposite viewpoint rather strongly. In fact, suggested that Boy Kuhn should be fired as commissioner.
They were both interesting columns, and I enjoyed both points of view.
Yeah,
how do you personally feel about it? You're in the sports business.
Well, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Boy Kuhn has been a very inconsistent commissioner. He's been very arbitrary in his decisions, and there are other people in baseball now who are associated with legal gambling to one degree or another, either through owning thoroughbred horses, association with racetracks, and that sort of thing, who have not been suspended by the commissioner, have not been told to get out of baseball where Willie Mays was. I also felt like that he handled the Mays situation poorly because he could have given Mays a direct warning not to get involved with this operation, and he didn't do it. And then he chose to handle it publicly, and I think it was a mistake.
He could have avoided all that publicity, and after all, Mays just got into the Hall of Fame.
That's true, and I think it's unfortunate. But, of course, Willie had a lot to say about that decision. It was his decision, and he knew what the consequences were going into it, whether the commissioner outlined them or not. So there's some fault to be found on both sides.
George, your sports department was, I wouldn't say criticized, but one of Chicago's sports executives felt that the Tribune was giving more publicity to one team in the same business than to the team that he represented. I don't have to mention any names because you know what I'm talking about. Did you ever run that thing down and find out if there was any, if he had really any reason to feel that way?
Well, let's see, his initials were Bill Veeck, right?
Yeah.
And he owns the White Sox, or he's a part owner of the White Sox. And I sympathize with his feeling, and I think that what we try to do is deal with the news in its importance day to day. And it just seemed to us that, well, particularly this summer, the Cubs made more news than the White Sox did because for a time there, they were in a pennant race, and they were competitive. And the White Sox really, from the word go, were not. And so that has some bearing on it. But the facts were that when we actually went down and started counting the number of words that were written on the White Sox and the number that were written on the Cubs, it actually came out in favor of the White Sox, which surprised me a little bit. But we don't have any policy that says we're going to give the White Sox more coverage than the Cubs or anything like that. It just seems to happen to break the way it does because of the news that those teams make.
Well, now, being the sports editor of the newspaper, is it your right and privilege to dictate policy like that, how much coverage each team gets, and if you personally feel that one is being accommodated to a greater extent than the other, can you say something about it, do something about it?
Oh, of course I would. The only thing I try to do, though, is maintain that we keep fairness in the pages, and we treat all the news sources fairly, and if we can do that, then I don't think that Bill Veeck or Bob Kennedy or anyone is going to have much of a complaint about the coverage. So that is our aim, is to be fair journalistically, with no prejudice to either side. Uh-huh. Sometimes people will make different interpretations of that, and everybody has their favorite team, and if their team isn't on top of the, getting the headlines each day, well, then they tend to interpret that as meaning that maybe we don't like their team as much as some other team. That really isn't true. We try to be neutral. We try to be objective. Sometimes maybe we don't. I mean, we're certainly not perfect, and we have a lot of things to overcome. There are just so many sports today, Bob, that need and want to be covered from high schools on up. Women are much more involved in sports today than they ever were before. they deserve the right to have their games covered too. And sports in general has expanded so much that it puts a heavy burden on a sports department to get all that information into a little bit of space each day.
Well, that is certainly true with the expansion of sports. What about soccer? What do you see in the future for soccer in this country?
I think soccer is going to surprise everybody in the next 10 years and become one of the major sports in the nation. There are already an awful lot of indicators to that effect. One is the rising liability in football. The cost of equipping a player to play football, the insurance problems that high schools and colleges face, the fact that almost all the helmet makers may go out of business in the football because of so many libel suits brought by players who have been injured. All these things are factors that are mitigating against football, plus the fact that you don't have to be a large, muscular athlete to play soccer, and you don't need a lot of equipment. All you need is a pair of shoes and shorts and a T-shirt, and anybody can play. It's becoming very popular in the lower grades and in the high schools, and I think when these kids grow up, they're going to take their love for the game with them, and you're going to see soccer develop as a major sport in Chicago and in the country.
If you had to list the teams in their popular priority, not in the space that you give to each sport, how do you view it? Is football number one or is baseball number one?
Well, our reader surveys have shown that baseball is really the more popular of the two sports, but football is difficult to judge the two because football plays so many fewer games and there are so much more emphasis, so much more importance riding on one football game because you're playing 160 baseball games and only 16, say, pro football games and only 11 college games. So obviously those games mean a lot more and they get more emphasis when they are played. But the overall feeling is that baseball is the more popular of the two. It's more of a family sport. You can take your whole family out to a game anytime you want to. You can't do that at Soldier Field if you want to go to a football game because most of those tickets are already bought in advance and they're quite a bit more expensive. So baseball probably is still national pastime.
Our guest today, we're delighted to have him as an old friend, George Langford, the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today, we're delighted to have him as an old friend. We've been on the sports beat together for a long time. That's George Langford, the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune. You mentioned before, but I don't think you gave the actual number. How many people do you employ in your department?
We have 55, including photographers, so we have a lot of people that go to work each day to put that sports section together.
Well, they do a great job, I'll tell you that. They never miss out on anything.
Well, we do miss a few things, and we hear about it. We have very loyal and concerned readers, and when we miss something or make a mistake, boy, they let us know. Our phone rings or we get letters. And actually, I really appreciate that because it means that they are interested in what we put out, and they keep on us to be better. And so we try to accommodate them.
I can remember back in the days when, in the early days, when I was on the baseball beat, and we had Irving Vaughn and Big Ed Burns. Right. That was before your time, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a little before my time, but I've heard a lot of stories about them, just like I've heard a few about you. Listen, while I'm here, I want to congratulate you on being elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's the first, I've never been this close to a Hall of Famer, and believe me, it's a real privilege, and I think you've made all of Chicago very proud.
Well, thank you, George. That's a nice thing to say. I wish you'd been at Cooperstown. It's a delightful place, and it's in a beautiful scenic area of New York, which you know New York State itself to drive across is just absolutely beautiful. But Cooperstown is so dedicated to baseball. Actually, it's a small town, and there's nothing there but baseball, memorabilia, museum, library, and everything else. Have you been there lately?
No, I haven't. I haven't been in the last few years, but I know upstate New York, and it's beautiful up there.
Yes. You know, in the museum now, they've taken practically one whole floor and dedicated it to Babe Ruth. And they've got films of him in action, and you can hear his voice up there on the telephone. And I mean, they really have done it up great in Cooperstown. It's a great place for a baseball fan to visit.
Well, now you covered Babe Ruth. Is he still the most exciting player that you ever saw play the game?
Yes, I think he was the most exciting. One thing you never had to do with Babe Ruth, you know, you've heard a baseball announcer say, "Well, there's a drive. I think it may be out of here." You knew it was out of there. Soon as he hit it, man, it was gone. And he used to hit high flies, and the ball would look like an aspirin tablet, where Lou Gehrig, who was in the same time, used to hit a lot of home runs, but he hit line drives. And Ruth was a wonderful, controversial character. As you know, he had a little trouble in the early years with Judge Landis.
Right. We were talking about that earlier, about the judge and how he ran the game of baseball. But let me, you are one person who can compare, and I'd like to know how you feel about it, the difference, the kind of home run that Dave Keeneland would hit and the type that Babe Ruth would hit. Are they similar?
Well, I think that they're similar in that Keeneland doesn't hit many line drives. He hits a lot of high fly balls. But Keeneland was no Babe Ruth when it came to putting people in the ballpark. There never was and never will be a drawing card in any sport like Babe Ruth. You know, we used to be drawing 3,000 people at Sox Park, and when he'd come to town, we'd draw 45,000. St. Louis Browns weren't drawing flies, and when he'd come to town, they'd pack the place. He had something about Babe Ruth. When he'd hit third base and take his cap off, and the crowd was standing and yelling and hollering, he'd carry his cap all the way to the Yankee dugout, and then they'd keep applauding, and he'd come out and take another bow. But he was really something. He was really, I think, the greatest drawing card sports has ever seen.
I don't think many people argue with you.
No.
The most pro sports have become so diluted anymore, and there's so many athletes in there that it takes a very, very special athlete today to make that big difference. There may be a few in professional basketball. Now, Irving Johnson is a rookie. He came in the Chicago Stadium earlier this week. And they almost doubled their attendance. And I'm sure they didn't come there to watch the Bulls play because they just lost their big center and a lot of other people. There are a few athletes who make that extra effort to bring people in who have that talent, but there aren't as many as there used to be.
What do you think is going to happen to hockey? I personally think hockey is a great game.
It's a great game, but I'll tell you, the people who run hockey have just about destroyed it. And I think that that Arthur Wirtz and Bill Wirtz have to take a lot of responsibility for the shape that hockey's in today, and the fact that they're announced 8,000 people they announced come to the stadium, and they may have 6, and that's stretching it. They've got 21 teams in the league. They play about 900 games. That makes a lot of games almost meaningless in order to eliminate just 5 of those teams for a playoff, which is equally meaningless. They've done everything they can to self-destruct a very good game, and they seem to have achieved it.
Would you like to see sudden death in every game? There's no fun in ties, but there's a saying, the visiting team gets a tie, they get a point out of it. That's like a victory on the road.
I think what they really need is to get rid of about 10 teams because they've got their talent stretched much too thin. A lot of the teams aren't drawing. The games are meaningless. There are just so many games. Sudden death would just wear everybody out, I think, because they don't have enough. They're playing one game here tonight to play another game tomorrow night, and they're trying to pack so many games into a short schedule that I don't think that's exactly the answer. I think one of the answers is Bob Verdi, I think, was your guest last week. He may have touched on this. They've got to eliminate the violence from hockey. I don't think that's helping anybody, and it's letting a lot of players who have marginal talent play in the big leagues simply because they've got a good right hand or a good uppercut or something like that, or a good stick, and they can't skate with a lot of people, and the emphasis is not on skating but on fighting. And you even see this sometimes in the peewees and the junior leagues around here, where kids try to emulate professional hockey players that they see on television today, and it's terrible. Plus the fact that hockey's in a lot of trouble. The violence has hurt them. A lot of other things have hurt them too.
You just mentioned the word fighting. Is the fight game dead?
Well, I think there's a young fellow named Sugar Ray Leonard who they've programmed and put on TV about every 2 or 3 months. ABC, I'd have to say, has done a pretty good job of pushing him. He's a very entertaining fighter, and he could put some life back into the fight game. But he's not a heavyweight, and always boxing has needed a colorful heavyweight champion, you know, to really spur interest. Now, John Tate is an interesting fighter. He's a better boxer than a lot of the heavyweights around, you know, with the exception of Ali in his prime. But he's a more intelligent fighter than some, and not just a slugger. So maybe someone like Tate would help. But the game is in a bit of trouble, and television seems to be exploiting it.
When I was on the beat covering baseball, for example, we'd be in Boston, and I'd know the Chicago Tribune writer and the different newspaper writers, and he'd be sitting next to a guy with a Western Union ticker. And you have practically all the details of that ball game in Boston in the early edition. How does that come about? What does he send into the Chicago Tribune office?
Well, we're like a lot of other companies today. We're now electronic, and our reporter will have a small computer with a typewriter keys on it, and he'll write his story on this computer, and it's stored on a cassette tape. And as soon as he's finished writing the story as the fight is going on, all he does is dial a number. He's got a telephone next to him, and he puts this telephone into the computer, and it will send all these, it'll transmit the story across telephone lines into our news department and into one of our computers, and we bring it up on a computer, edit it, and send it down by a computer to be set and typed by a computer. So it can all that can be done in a space of about 5 or 6 minutes.
Well, that's interesting. You do the same thing with a baseball game?
We'll do the same thing with a baseball game. And a baseball writer will write, say, 3 stories in one day. He'll write a story for the early editions of the paper, which come out in the early afternoon. And then when the game is on, he'll be writing a running account of the game, which he puts into the computer. And as soon as the game is over, we'll put the final score on the top of this running account of the game and make another edition. And then that whole story will come out, and he'll write what we call his final story, his night lead, which we'll put into the late editions, usually the 3-star or the 5-star paper, which you buy on the newsstands.
How's it working out with that early edition of the Tribune that you can pick up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon? How's that working out? The sports section is pretty much the same as it was in the morning, isn't it?
Yeah, we don't change a whole lot of that because of deadline times. It's a very complete section, but it's a little bit late. I mean, it's coming out in the afternoon where you could have gotten the same information, say, in the morning. But we try to update any new, if there's any new news, we'll give it to you in that Green Streak edition. But normally it stays pretty much the same as the 5-star.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend, the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune, George Lankford. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is George Lankford, the sports editor of one of the world's great newspapers, the Chicago Tribune. As I mentioned in introducing George and having worked for GN and the Tribune for many, many years, I was always proud in various sections of the world to go to a newsstand, and there, lo and behold, was the Chicago Tribune. It may have been like in Tokyo a few days late, but it was great to see a hometown paper.
Well, I hope that that makes people feel at home when they find a Tribune there. It still is circulated pretty much nationally. I don't know how widespread our international circulation is today, but we still get papers all around the country.
One of the things that I noticed, you really appreciate the value of a newspaper if you're a day or two without it. For example, when I was on the baseball beat, 3 times we were in Detroit when they had a newspaper strike. You couldn't get a paper. Well, you had television, you had radio, but that didn't take the place of a newspaper. And I don't recall ever a newspaper strike here in Chicago, George. Do you?
No, they've come close a few times, but they've never had one, at least in my memory, and I hope we never do.
The business of quality of paper, has that changed over the years?
Not really. The Tribune has its own paper mills in Canada and makes its own paper for the Tribune, and they've tried to maintain the standard of quality of that paper. They've had to probably make a few adjustments over the years because of the circulation of the paper, which has just grown and grown and grown. And in order to make that much newsprint, takes an awful lot of material.
You know, George, one of the things that has always mystified me is how the Chicago Tribune or the New York Times can put out a Sunday paper for that kind of money. I think if they charged a buck, everybody'd be happy to pay.
I'm glad you said that, because the price is going up to 75 cents Sunday, and we're all concerned about it, but we're hoping that everybody will still buy their Tribune, but it has become very, very expensive, and of course the Tribune, Sunday Tribune weighs about 5 pounds, you know,
yeah.
So we think they're getting their money's worth with all the things that we give them.
Yes, I was saying the other day to someone who happened to be at my house over the weekend, you could sit there on a Sunday morning, pick up that Sunday Tribune and read it all day. It's a lot for the money.
You know, I start reading the Sunday paper on Friday because we get proof sheets and that sort of thing, and it takes me Friday, Saturday, and most of Sunday to read it all.
George, I want to thank you a lot for being our guest today. You and I have been friends a long time, and it's a friendship that I treasure, and your newspaper is certainly one of the great newspapers of the world, and I'm happy today that you could be our guest.
Listen, I'm happy to be a guest of the Hall of Famer.
Thank you, George. Our guest today has been George Langford, the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune. Next week, we'll be talking with one of the world's great bowlers, Carmen Salvino. And now have a happy weekend, and this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.